done through entities which are closely related to the department and so on, but still they have a separate structure and so on and so on and so on. So what we've been trying to do is to try and report on the matter a bit differently. What I've tried to ask Mr. Mkateni to do is that when he looks at conservation, he must report to us in terms of the conservation efforts that are taking place, so that we have an idea that I can also see that the department is making sure that Sand Parks and Isitsmangaliso is integrated into their work. You know, when he gives an input from the department, and then I get a separate input from Sand Parks and a separate one from Isitsmangaliso, that's where I think there's a bit of a disjunction. So what I'm trying to do now is to get us to get a report on conservation. There's been slightly misunderstanding. I still wanted Sand Parks and Isitsmangaliso to raise whatever issues they still want to raise, more than just what we've done there, because although you raise the conservation issues, clearly Sand Parks every year we also look at their budget and their things and so on. Now that has been, to some degree, I've asked the department to integrate that as well, so that when you say things to me, I can at least use the knowledge of the department to assess what you're saying. So this is all new. It's not so easy. We'll probably get it better in future. But what there is a method to what I'm trying to do, and the method is really, can I see that my leadership in the department is actually pulling together all these ends and not just dealing with three different entities? That's really what I'm trying to do. And then the same for biodiversity and, of course, for SANBI, who is the major institution there that deals with it. So what we're going to do is that Mr. Mkateni is going to give his input, and then I'm going to give Sand Parks and Isitsmangaliso a chance to raise any other issues they want to draw to our attention that has not been covered in the overall input, okay? So that those don't get lost, at least, those entities still feel. And the same will be with SANBI. When we look at biodiversity, they will also get a chance at the end to raise whatever they would want to raise extra, which has maybe not been mentioned or they would like to emphasize. All right. So just to get that clear, that there may have been a little bit of a misunderstanding as far as that's concerned. We still want them to also raise with us whatever they would want to. Okay. Mr. Mkateni.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
There's a whole document number 3 in your file.
And
called Overview of Program 5. Now this is why my head was snapped off. This unit is called Biodiversity and Conservation. So the fact that I'm now splitting it has caused earth-shattering divisions and splits in the department. This department will never be the same after this. Please try and do it like that, Mr. Mkateni. Let's hear conservation, let's hear biodiversity. And of course, I realize there's an overlap, but we're all intelligent enough to work out what that overlap is.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. Chair, you are not wrong, because the end
is very infrequently wrong.
is the one creating a confusion. As a result, when I joined the department, I just said, why we call it end? I was told it's in the ENE document. Seemingly, it's difficult to change into treasure. Therefore, the end, Chair, I hope one day we'll call it biodiversity conservation, not end conservation. Thank you, Chair, for that observation. Next slide.
Now you're bringing up old...
Chair, the... So go to the slide for outline.
This fellow starts like this, I know it's going to be a long day.
Chairperson, in my presentation, just to align on what you just said, I will talk quickly to the conservation mandate and talk about the broad biodiversity and conservation approach, nationally and even globally. And I'll be quick on enabling legislation, the World International Work and Protocol that is informing this program's work and also this program influencing internationally. And I will briefly show the regulatory tools and strategic planning tools that we have developed in the last 17 years as a department to deal with biodiversity conservation. Talk quickly about how we work with our public entities. Touch on shared areas of work broadly, not on conservation part, and then in the state plan I will zoom to the conservation, talk to the state plan, and then after that talk to the alignment. The last two bullets are for tomorrow's discussion on the biodiversity part. Next slide. This is our strategy map at a glance, because we deal with similar stakeholders in this sector. We work with those stakeholders, sharing information, working on issues of corporate governance, and also the issue of advocacy and awareness is a thing that we must continuously do. I think what we do improving this, we need to talk to the global agenda. How do we create awareness and advocacy at that level? In terms of internal processes, that's what we're looking at, all of us, on issues of conservation, sustainable use, and fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising out of biodiversity. Learning growth areas is common knowledge that any organization wants to attract and develop an appropriate human capital development strategy. This is the mandate that was given to SANBI to look at that broadly for the whole sector, not for us only. And also, of course, aligning our strategies with the finances. Next slide. The mandate of conservation in South Africa is a concurrent function or competence in our constitution, except national parks, national botanical gardens, and marine resources. The World Heritage, the time the constitution was developed, South Africa had not yet signed or acceded to the World Heritage Convention globally. Therefore, now the World Heritage is a national competency, but is not explicitly listed in our constitution. This means that legislation can be enacted both at national and provincial levels. This has resulted in not less than 21 institutions at national and provincial level playing a role in biodiversity conservation. Health chair and oral members, we need to work with all the provinces, not only our public entities, in pursuing this mandate. Therefore, DIA's responsibility is to coordinate national systems and approaches for development, implementation of legislation, compliance and enforcement, providing direction in terms of norms and standards, guidance, monitoring and evaluation, and reporting. We have to do that one for the whole country. Next slide. This slide is trying to show in the conservation estate how many entities are managing this. Honourable members, this slide is not in your face. I'm not sure it was discovered this morning. I lifted from some of other work just to demonstrate that how many institutions are managing the same issue in this country. You can see SANParks is having a bigger share there of 53% of our conservation estate. Now we have many others who are also contributing to this. To deal with this, we have to develop systems to make sure there's proper reporting, there's effectiveness. You see now strengthening is one area that we want to coordinate all the stakeholders to make sure we manage this asset very well. Next slide. Our broader approach to conservation. Protected area system is globally recognized as the way of conserving biodiversity. You also have an ecosystem level approach when you deal with biodiversity conservation. At the species level, although it's not encouraged, but you are compelled because there will be species of national and global concern. Therefore, you have to also look at species approach. This is our approach we do as a program in South Africa. Although ecosystem approach is always recommended at a global level, people will say, why focus on a species, not focusing on an ecosystem? Because if the ecosystem is intact, the species will continue to grow. In terms of protected area management, we're just bulleting what are we involved in as a sector. We oversee the expansion of the conservation estate through the coordination of development and implementation of provincial expansion plans in line with the national strategy for expansion. We developed this strategy 3 years ago or 4 years ago for everyone who's involved in this system to know where are we going in terms of our expansion strategy in order to be able to reach the 17% that was acceded globally. We also facilitate land acquisition for Sandbox and the Simangaluso to support their expansion plans. We withdraw some of these areas because some of them are no longer relevant for conservation. We assist them in that process, and also expropriation of some of these and proclamation, of course. We coordinate the establishment, development, and management of wild heritage sites in South Africa. As you all know that, we have 8 of them as we speak. We also facilitate establishment and development of existing of transfrontier conservation areas with our neighboring states in order to facilitate conservation plans, creation of migratory routes, cross-border research, disease control, law enforcement, creation of access and tourist facilities. But this area, we're experiencing problems, but the intention is to have cross-border conservation because everyone knows that ecosystems are borderless.
Right, I want sometime in the future, I want an input on these trans-frontier conservation areas.
Okay.
Because my experience is that we're having huge problems and that we may need to have to revise this because I'm not sure that they're working. It may be a very noble idea, but they can only be noble if you can put equal resources from all the countries into it. If you can't put equal resources, it's a recipe for disaster. So I'm going to ask at some stage for a full input on this, that we can look at which ones exist, what are the problems, and what is the future about them. This one and the Green Fund. I think we need to hear about the Green Fund a bit more, okay?
Okay, so we can...
All right, just go on.
We are also, as I indicated, that there are many institutions managing the estates. We want to strengthen management and effectiveness of these areas. Hence, we developed a tracking and monitoring tool to monitor performance, because when we did an assessment, we realized that the success rate was very low. Some of these areas are in bad shape. We are implementing the CBD program of work, Convention on Biological Diversity. They have a program of work for all state parties that they must implement. There's also a thing called MEN and Biosphere program, where they look at broader land use in terms of development and conservation. Facilitation of ecotourism development in protected areas through infrastructure development in order to support socio-economic development. The view there is that these areas cannot exist in isolation, especially the use of land claims, for some of them are underplayed. Therefore, if there's no economic benefit, people might take over and put livestock in these areas. Hence, we have to develop ecotourism development. Oversight of public entities, Chair, as we do to have in a robust fashion. Development and implementation of policy and legislation, we do that. We promote education, like there's a Sandbox Kids in program, with an MOU between ourselves, PKMP, Sandbox, and Department of Education. And also there's also a People and Parks program that we look at. We facilitate co-management of protected areas between local communities and authorities. This is in section 42 of our legislation, that there should be co-management program. We also support in the resolution of land claims in protected areas and facilitate post-settlement support. We facilitate development of suitable financing mechanisms for protected areas, develop and maintain a register of these protected areas. We do this register because some of these are just paper parks. Now you need to verify if the park is indeed still there. Because we realize in some provinces, there are houses where it's supposed to be a park. They were only on paper. Therefore, we keep on updating that register to make sure we know exactly what we're dealing with. We review environmental authorization and ensure mining is avoided at all costs and impact mitigated or is offset. On the ecosystem, briefly, this will be a discussion for tomorrow. We develop guidelines, criteria, listing ecosystems, norms and such to make sure that we deal with ecosystem approach when we deal with our biodiversity. At the species level, I think the percentage is there. Next slide. Are indicating that we are a mega diverse country. Therefore, we cannot only stick to an ecosystem approach. We need to deal with species. Therefore, mechanisms should be in place for managing species of special concern. But there will be species people, they will say, why not focusing on this species, even if it's a bullfrog? But if there's a need to focus on it, we need to look at that. We develop criteria for listing of these species, hence we have DOPS and regulations. Develop norms and standards for species management plans, like the Albany Cycad, there's a plan, Black Rhino, the Penguin, and the Pelagonia. Norms and standards for managing elephants. There was a huge debate in the country at some point that elephants were causing impact to ecosystems. We had to develop norms and standards for that. We also do special focus on enforcement interventions. SANBI is our scientific authority to look at issues of use and non-determined findings. It's a global debate to make sure that when a species is used, you must make sure there's a non-determined finding, which SANBI is doing for us. On legislation front, we have four pieces of legislation where we get our mandate from. They are listed there in that slide. Next slide. In the international front, there's a list of conventions that we should be complying with. They are all listed there. There are even new ones, like your science platform interface, the IPBS, which is similar to IPCC in climate change. Now it's a platform for biodiversity, for reporting, assessment, verifying science, making sure the science is credible and is reported as such. We also have UNESCO and Palestine. Regulatory tools, I won't waste your time on those, but they are there. In the last 17 years, we've been developing these tools to make sure that our biodiversity is in good hands. There are also strategic planning tools that we have put in place, like the National Biodiversity Strategy and Action Plan, is called an NBSAP. It's a 20-year conservation strategy that all parties to the CBD must develop. We have that strategy. We're starting to review that strategy to look at other emerging issues. We have the expansion strategy to make sure that we expand this estate to reach that global target. We have an action plan to combat desertification. Our regional plans, guidelines are in place. We have management effectiveness tracking tool that I spoke about. There's a human capital development strategy. These are all strategic tools to guide the sector on how to run the business in order to conserve our biodiversity. Next slide. Chair and honorable members, our public entities that we're dealing with in Program 5 are three, although they are provinces also. Is SANParks, is Manganiso, and SANBI. We align our strategic plans between the year and our entities, but I think, as Chair indicated, we need in future to work on the language, because we do approve their strategic plans. They do submit them to the department. They also interface with other programs, like with climate change. SANBI is doing a lot of work on climate change with the year. Oceans and coasts, SANParks are managing some of the marine areas, and Isimangaliso is doing work on marine areas, and also SANBI are doing some research on the marine ecosystems. They also interact with the environmental programs. They implement some of the programs, working for programs that are run by the department, but they do a lot of work on that. The issue of administration, governance, and education awareness is one area we're working together. Next slide. This area, honorable members, is just to share with you shared areas of work broadly, not only on conservation, both biodiversity and conservation. Under species management, there's a column where SANBI is contributing to species management, because they do monitor, do assessment, they need to report on the state of conservation in this country. At the same time, they do the non-determinant finding as a scientific authority. SANParks, they do implementation, they develop plans. Like, for example, they just deliver elephant management plans to the department for approval. That was one of the work that SANParks they do at an operational level. Isimangaliso, they do the same thing, they do implement plans. We as DEA, we do policy development, regulatory function, sector coordination, because of the concurrency of the mandate. In the project area front, biodiversity planning is informed by a national biodiversity assessment that is done by SANBI. because our expansion is informed by that assessment. They do botanical gardens. Sandparks is managing the conservation estate, as we saw in that will I showed here. They manage about more than 53% of the estate. Therefore, they need to manage the system of national parks and report on how that system is managed. In Simangaliso, they make sure that the well treated site is managed very well, and also at the same time, we as the we do policy and strategy, government sector, and coordination. Around effectiveness of intervention to curb wildlife crime, Sandy is tracking species trends. Are they declining? Are they increasing? What are threatening processes? Sandparks and Simangaliso are managing on the ground. Sandparks, they deal with rhino poaching in the national parks and any other threatening process to species. They do that work. We as DEA, we need to work with enforcement agencies, other government departments, consolidating a strategy, giving a policy direction in dealing with that with that problem. Under knowledge management, which is research, SANDI is maintaining a database and inventory of biodiversity in South Africa. They also have what we call a managed network. They interact with other academic institutions in terms of collating biodiversity research and also work as a repository for that information so that they can report as such. In national parks, research in national parks is done. They do river research, big mammals research. They do a lot of work. There's one area chair they can add on. In Simangaliso, they do the hydrology work of that area. They do work of on turtles in the Simangaliso Wetland Park Authority. On our side, we maintain the protected area register, and we do what we call science policy interface. We check if the policies we have are indeed addressing the threats that we see from the research produced by our institutions. Biodiversity sector contribution to economic development. SANBI is making a case for biodiversity. And then SANBAC's community-based socio-economic initiatives are doing those on the ground. And in Simangaliso, they look at issues of to produce economic benefits in the area of Simangaliso. On our side, development of a national biodiversity and economic development strategy. We need to do that so that we know we look at the same thing when we look at issues of economic development and biodiversity. Coming check to our threat plan, focusing in the area of conservation. We want a performance, a percentage increase, I hope I'm right, increase on land under conservation. We are currently at 7.7%. We want in the next coming year to be at 8.2%, which means only 0.5 increase. Our target in 2017-18 is 10.2. Long-term target is 12% by 2028. Chair, you alluded to the fact that there's a 17% agreed globally. We were part of those negotiations. We reached a compromise because we were vehemently opposed to this target. But some countries, like in Africa, Tanzania, Mozambique, and Madagascar, they are way above that. Therefore, they were admitting that we must agree on 17%. But for us, we wanted to stick to 12%. But it was a compromise that we had to make to go to 17%. But we endeavor to get to that. But our projection by 2028, we will be only at 12%. The ease of management effectiveness, when we did that assessment, the average was 49%. Which was like a failure rate in terms of our estate, the way our estate is managed. But what we want to see is that 21 operated areas scored above 67, that's what happened. But moving forward, we want to see 60% of our estate to reach a score of 68%. hence we're assisting them with interventions at a national level. 2017-18, we want to see 80% of the estate with a net cost of 8% also. But in the future, we would like to see a sustainable financing mechanism for all these areas, because the reason they are failing, they are underfunded, they are struggling, the province. People and Parks program, we want to implement resolutions of these conferences. I must say, in the last 5 years, we've seen improvement in terms of relationship between communities and our management authorities. In the past, there was hostility. Now we're able to come up with a plan to say, how do we improve relationship? How do we make sure that these areas are sustained without threats of being invaded by communities? Therefore, we're continuing with that program so that they can see by 2020 there will be indeed economic benefits. In terms of TFCAs, we will focus 2013-14 to the Manuti Tribe Drakensberg to make sure that there's a 5-year plan developed. Chair, it talks to that issue of allocation of resources. Without these plans, it's difficult for them to check as they're committing to them. Therefore, we'll endeavor to have a plan for the Manuti and see if they can finance what we agreed on. You can see the target of 2017-18 is to have the 5 tools in place to make sure that we're moving together with them. In terms of legislation, we want to make sure that we review our Protected Areas Act. We want to align the World Heritage Convention Act and the Protected Areas Act, because they talk about the same thing. And the difference is that each of the protected areas is set aside for a different purpose, but we deal with the same system of World Heritage Sites and protected areas. Therefore, we want to have one legislation talk to those. Coming zooming to each objective, what it means for each entity and peer. Because, as I said earlier, we use different language, but we talk to the same thing. This SO that talks about biodiversity conserved, protected, and threat mitigated is an SO in the DEA strategy plan. The key indicator there is the percentage increase and also the use of monitoring and tracking the effectiveness. In some parts of the plan, they call it improving conservation estate. Therefore, we're looking at the same thing. It's just language. You can see the indicators there is to see progress, have plans in place, and also look at cultural heritage program, which is also linked to our World Heritage Program. This is, they want to ensure heritage values, the values are conserved. Therefore, they want to improve their score in management effectiveness. On the one of fair access and equitable sharing of benefits is in the diaspora plan. Our action there is to make sure that the people and parks program is implemented. There's also sustainable natural resources-based project implemented in protected areas. SANParks, they call it facilitating socio-economic development. Therefore, you can see they want to have a number of community-based socio-economic initiatives implemented in their parks. Isimangaliso, they want to ensure the values are conserved, but they want to increase the number of SMEs, privately ownership of some of the business in Isimangaliso. On one of the same objective, you can see there, they want to grow, SANParks want to grow societal support and providing access and benefit sharing. Therefore, they want to have a total number of participants in their environmental program. Isimangaliso is taking the same line. They want to create jobs and also create new permanent jobs. The one of improving compliance with environmental legislation, SANParks, they want to improve conservation estate, but they want to deal with issues of rhino poaching incident, to drop the rate of the killings and also rehabilitate some of the areas. In our case, we want to have 5 interventions in dealing with the safety and security of rhinos population in South Africa. Isimangaliso, they want to continue with the detection of poaching and also negative impacts. We want to have minimum requirements for biodiversity land use planning and integrated environmental management updated. It's in sandparks they deal with their development in national parks in their own way. They can talk to that one. It's Mangaliso, because of they have concessionaires and community projects, they want to make sure that they target illegal development. But the problem in that area in regarding that. Chair and all of the members, at the end of day one on conservation. Thank you.
The end when I say the end. When you say the end. Where is the rhino input? Part of conservation.
Yes,
I'll deal with it, Chair.
All right, but first now, before we get to the rhino input, let's first get to the to sandparks. Are there any areas about sandparks that you want to highlight to us over and above what already has been said by the department, Doctor?
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. Just two issues on rhino poaching. It was quite encouraging to get the feedback from members, some members of CITES in Bangkok, acknowledging the contribution against rhino poaching that the government collectively is making, despite escalating numbers. I also want to draw the attention of honorable members that although Kruger is the epicenter of poaching because of its proximity and sharing of the border with Mozambique, which I will dwell on. Indeed, we do have other success stories to talk about in terms of protecting rhino in our parks. We have several populations. We have a black rhino population in Addo National Park. We haven't lost an animal there. At Mountain Zebra, Kam Dibua, we conserve the Namakaru area, which is quite a good habitat for black rhino. We haven't lost any there, and we're increasing the number of animals there. Mukala National Park, again, a very good population of black rhino, which we haven't lost an animal from. Mapungubwe, we have both white and black rhino there. We haven't lost
any. You haven't got accommodation. You're not losing, but you haven't got accommodation there.
I will have accommodation for the committee this time. But we have a sizable population there, Chair, and we haven't lost an animal, partly because of having a good neighbor in the form of Botswana, where law enforcement is quite strong. It all boils down to the issue of resources. At Marakele, near Chabazimbi, we've only lost three rhinos since 2008. So the efforts are there, they are showing in other areas, but the Kruger situation is very complex. Part of the problem is the non-performance of the Mozambican government in terms of meeting its bargain of the Great Limpopo Transfrontier Park Treaty. They were supposed
to... Doctor, can I just say, I don't want to interrupt your input because I want to give you the chance. But I'm thinking that all the rhino issues we should do under the rhino input. So maybe what you should do is just keep all the comments on the rhinos just under the rhino. So we look at rhinos at one time.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So just bear that in mind. I just
okay.
Try and cut your comments short on that. And concentrate on the other stuff. I'm happy with this other things that you're telling us successes about the Zebras.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't cut you off first, because these successes are broader than just the poaching.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to poaching stuff and that, and what we're doing, try and keep those comments for the rhino input, okay?
Yeah.
But I'm happy on the general things you said.
Yeah. And the number of arrests have increased. Unfortunately, we have no control over prosecution. It takes longer from investigations to completion of a case to prosecute. prosecute offenders. But generally, Chair, it's not a lost situation. I think we are lacking in terms of modern technology, early detection, aerial surveillance, ground surveillance by means of radars, and buried cameras, sense cameras that we can actually put in underground to detect the movement of poachers, so that we respond specifically to a trigger. At this point in time, our people are simply monitoring, but without specific information in terms of the triggers where people are cutting through the fence. So that is why it's important to have a fence that can help us as an early warning system, and also to prevent rhino from crossing into Limpopo National Park and the conservancy on the south of the Masinga. So around rhinos, that is the challenge that we face, and we also have a problem, Chair, in terms of responding at night. None of our helicopters at this point in time can fly at night, but that will change very soon. Our honorary rangers have managed to acquire through a donation a twin engine helicopter, Huey, which is being assembled at Lanseria Airport. It will be able to fly at night. It will have all the gadgets that we need to assist us in terms of detection.
I've got machine guns and cannons.
On the Transfrontier Park Initiative, Chair, I think what our board has requested us to do now is to really be careful when it comes to the planning part. I think the problems that we have with the GLTP, the Great Limpopo Transfrontier Park now, is that a lot of things happened in haste. The plans were not really thought through well. We didn't have law enforcement plans. We didn't have all the other plans that are required in advance. So that
you've got my full support for this. Amagashle would be Transfrontier. If we haven't got commitments in writing from those countries, if we haven't got our plans fully ready, then let's not have Transfrontier Farms.
Yeah.
You've got my support and the committee's support in slowing this process down. Because and that's why I want a separate input on this. All my experiences are that this thing is done with good intentions, but we have rushed into something that we're not ready
for. So, Chair, going forward and dealing with the situation, the board has asked us to, in our next meetings with our partners, to work on the issue of joint operations, sharing of information, intelligence, radio communication, and generally working together as a team, because at the moment we don't know what they are doing on the other side. There are no rangers, trained rangers. If they do have, they are not armed or equipped. They have to go and report a crime to the local police, whom we arrest the following day for the same misdemeanors. So it's quite a challenge. But I just wanted to highlight those two areas, Chair. The rest was well covered by Funi. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Zulumis, anything from Mrs. Mangalusi you want to bring to our attention?
The Honourable Chair, a few things. I think one area that needs to be picked up on is the work being done on implementation of government programs. For example, working for water, working on fire, because it's not part of the presentation, but what comes from the other branches I think is very well demonstrated. Certainly in Isimangalisa, I'm sure before the sand park. Two other areas, for example, would be the Sambi, the incoming intern.
What is the point you're making about those?
Just that there's integration, the entities are actually being a place of implementation for the other government programs. And I think very often there's a higher level of implementation when it comes to the entities and sometimes with other, both Sand Park and Isimangalisa, and it's going through other areas.
I think when we were with you guys, you explained to us that you had problems with those projects. Weren't there some problems? Was it with the funding or was it something?
No.
And that you then had to get your own people to do
supporting necessarily, but I think the internship program coming through Sandy as well as the environmental monitor program will be another example that will certainly help make a difference in the parks.
So you're advocating more integration?
Yeah, on those programs, yes.
And
it's improving.
I'm very supportive of that.
The other area that would have come through or has initially come through into some challenges going forward is I think parks continue to be lightning rods. Very often they exist in areas of poverty, and very often with slow delivery by local governments and other sectors, parks are big deliverance. They're increasingly becoming a focus from rural communities, and there's a need for big development projects outside parks to actually pull some of the pressure off parks. And I'm sure the committee is aware that there's talk of land claims being reopened June, July. And I think that's an area that the committee needs to pay attention to as well, because it adds a whole new dimension. The People and Parks program is very far down the line. How they get reopened is something I think will need serious attention, because it's taken 10 years very often to try and get to where we've come with these agreements and these co-management agreements. On the sort of upside, I think Isimanglisa's entrepreneurship project is worth looking at now in its third phase, and I think it's a model that's worth looking at. It's, I think, the first rural hub probably operating in the country.
Just give us some feel for what they do and so on.
The entrepreneurship program is bringing in entrepreneurs on their committee. It takes them through a mentorship program and then a system of setting up businesses in around parks. And then there's ongoing support from mentors. We've used a Johannesburg-based model, and I think it's actually beginning to show real results. We're getting the first black charter fisher-owned businesses in the country, et cetera, coming through that program. And I think it's worth looking at, because the portfolio committee is very interested in the developmental approach to conservation. On species management, because there's a lot of focus on rhino, I think two notable things in Isimanglisa, we're trying to establish the only coastal population of Oribi at the moment. There is no remaining population of coastal Oribi in South Africa, as well as reintroducing eland, which will have a coastal population of eland. You get coastal Oribi further north of Mozambique, but there are no populations left in South Africa. And we've got the only grassland which we've managed now to recruit, 66,000 hectare grassland to the border park. And that really links to our research program. I think parks very often underrate their research. We have about 150 research register research programs. And there's a very strong focus as one to see their raise in hydrology. And it is a difficult issue because your hydrology issues really start upstream. It's no different from Kruger. We're at the bottom end. And it probably is your greatest ecological threat currently to the Isimanglisa system. So it's also an area that the portfolio continues to watch. And you did ask for feedback through the Jet World Bank project, what's happening with the mouse. That's really what it's about.
Well, give us a bit of an input on what is happening to the mouse that I get emails every day for.
The mouse, one has to look at two sides. Currently, you have a linking between the Umfolozi River and the Sambucia estuary. The Umfolozi River is open to the sea, and so effectively you have a functional marine system. In terms of the JET program, the final...
That's now open.
It is through...
I mean, I saw you guys have linked,
yeah.
Linked it now.
It is open through Umfolozi. Through Umfolozi is open, but the actual Sambucia estuary itself hasn't opened, but the estuary is open to Umfolozi, which is open to the sea. And over the summer months, it's
so
eating its way north.
So now it still flows into the estuary.
Yes, correct.
And then you say the estuary itself is not open to the sea,
yeah.
But a part of the Umfolozi
has. Yes, correct. But you effectively have one mouth, and with the eating of the Umfolozi north, it will eventually
go
open.
North, it
yes. In terms of the JET study, the final technical team has been put in place and appointed, and they've started their work. And there's a lot of work going on at the moment. It'll take about 9 months.
All this rain you've got, hasn't it affected the...
lakes come up just under a metre, and it's looking very healthy at the moment.
Is
there's some boating taking place now. It's actually very, very active. It's fun.
A metre?
Just under a metre, yeah.
With all the water?
Yeah.
Interesting. And you say, so there is now a natural link to the sea, but it's,
yeah,
it's still
yeah.
The Umfolozi, and
yeah.
It's starting, as you explained, it's going to move north all the time.
Yeah.
And at some stage, that will then be the estuary.
Yeah. And then the one final thing here, just adding on, is, and it will come into Dr. Preston's presentation, I'm sure, is there's a new alien about called Carcinium, and it's been marching its way from the north to the south, And two or three years ago, it was at the Cozy Bay border post, and as we speak today, it's almost around Richard's Bay. Comes from, it's done big damage in Australia, and it looks like a pretty white flower, but it will probably be more damaging than your chromosomes and some of your existing avians, which you've seen as a big threat.
Chair, we need to work on. but our OC colleagues can elaborate. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, DDG and Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We are working closely with DMR in this regard. There is a continuous engagement where we have a dedicated task team where we have members from our branch interacting with their branch on a regular basis. But moreover, what we're also doing is we are busy with a vulnerability study to isolate particular areas for no-go areas for mining as well. And in that regard, we're also talking to them. So it is a threat that is real, but it's something that is being addressed in terms of being proactive and also to some extent being reactive.
Have applications been approved?
There are applications that came through, and I am certain that there are applications that have been approved.
That worries me. You say you are certain, but now, I mean, I need certainty.
Yes.
Our department, are we aware that there are ones that have been approved, and what is our attitude to it?
Chair, I am not aware of any huge impact or any permit given for mining along our 3,500 kilometer coast as yet. I am aware of plans and certain speculations that are ongoing, but there hasn't been anything to that effect as yet.
I think what I want is on this thing, I want a more full report on this, you know, your kind of research, how far are you, what are your deadlines, because I think this is something we need to discuss. The other issue I wanted to ask you is, isn't legally, aren't we responsible for the EIA?
I think there's two issues here. The one is the coastal mining, which is more what Razina is talking about in terms of actually not onshore mining. In terms of the offshore mining, there is this issue about that we have very limited information. We don't even have that mapping, and that is part of that ocean policy work that we were talking about. And there we have the mandate in terms of the EIA regulation in terms of offshore.
Onshore,
it is also us through some sneaky listed activities, which is also about the removal of the sand onshore. So if they actually have to move volumes of sand. See, the one that is actually...
Oh, it's the one there where you, if you move more than five...
That's the ocean bed, but there's a similar provision that is for the beaches as well in terms of the removal of sand, and there's also activities or restrictions both into the Integrated Coastal Management Act in terms of activities in the littoral access zone, which is basically that part. Where we have a bigger problem is where we have vast sand dunes that is falling to the ocean but doesn't fall within that protection zone. The most recent case, there was quite, and Andrew can tell you the history about sand mining in Isimangaliso and how that ultimately resulted in the World Heritage Site. The most recent case that members might be familiar with is the Wild Coast mining and the linking around that, and that there was actually a permit issued there which the Minister of Mineral Resources, then based on the objections, withdrawn, and it is the one that is most likely to be reinstated is the one in the Wild Coast. So there's different strategies around.
We've done research on that one. And we've got an opinion on it.
Yes, there's quite a lot of work that was done in terms of the SEA and the Fond du Lac work that was done in biodiversity, and we have been quite involved in that specific process run by the DMR in terms of their legislation. So there is, it's a big issue. It's also a huge potential in terms of economic benefits. So we have a very real tension in a very poor area of our country around the possibilities that mining can bring versus a real sensitive ecosystem. So it is a very fine balancing act in that specific strike which has been going on for quite some time.
And we flew over there.
Yes. And then there's actual mining of sand itself for building purposes, which is, you know, similar to the sand mining inland, which all seems small, but that cumulatively you have a big problem. And part of the dynamics that we look at, and Razina can talk about that in detail, is where we also have coastal erosion, and where we need to do, where sand gets depleted through that natural processes, and we then need to do beach, what is the word, rehabilitation, or actually bring sand back to form beaches where you need beaches. So we need to also ourselves move sand around along the coastal area as a result of erosion and changing ocean dynamics around that. So there's a whole lot of issues around dunes that might be very useful to look at. But I think there's the two issues, on the ocean side and then the interface between the ocean and the land.
This is Lewis.
Honorable Chair members, just to deal with the sand mining, in Isimangaliso there was an attempt to expand mining outside the park north from the existing mining by Richardson Minerals, and they have pulled back on that, and it seems to be holding. So there is a firm boundary. There's obviously the Mtanzini mining issue going on, which is up next to Isimangaliso. In regard to the seabed, I think it's important to note that the whole coast has been divided up into prospecting licenses, that DMR, through PASA, is currently issuing EMPRs for prospecting. Prospecting is not an innocent thing. It's not an unharmful thing. It uses explosives and all sorts of other things. Isimangaliso has had to institute two applications from DMR. We have objected strongly to one application. The correspondence is in place. They wanted to do prospecting within the park, both the marine protected area and the proclaimed park. They seem to have...
Do they do it or do...
They issue it to a license. In this case, close to the shore is through a British-based company, and there was a 35 kilometer offshore version. So we have submitted comments. They seem to be pulling back into what they call the buffer zone, which is 10 kilometers around the boundary. But the DMR process seems to be fairly DMR-driven. It doesn't follow the EIA process as such, so they issue the EMPR. So we had two applications that we're currently dealing with. And they don't always seem to be coordinated in terms of where they've given the prospecting rights. There seems to be an overlap. So just south of Isimangaliso, I think there has been a surge.
So do you get the right to prospect without an EIA?
Correct. They issue what they call an EMPR. And that's issued by PASA, which is an agency in DMR.
Recommend your through your earlier comment that maybe the department must come back with a sense of research information that already exists with the geoscience and DMR, with a sense of what is the extent of sand mining in the country and what are the controls or how it is controlled in terms of legislation. But I also think we need to be thinking about how do we then use this process of alignment between the NIMA and PRDA to also catch these activities in terms of mining.
I mean, it's really worrying what the Lumis is saying. I mean, I find it very worrying.
But they
do it seems slightly contradictory from what Oceans are saying, because they seem to not think there's much going on. So it's really worrying me that he says the coast has been divided up into, what do you call it? Pockets, right?
Prospecting areas.
Prospecting areas.
Yes.
And then people are now applying in those prospecting areas.
That's not on the coastline.
No, this is
that's
in the sea.
In the sea, that information we first have to understand that database, because geoscience is then the agency that DMR uses to map the seabed for oil or whatever for mining purposes. have that in the current agreement with DMR, I think the minister should then be insisting that we extend the agreement beyond the land area to then include the mining activities in the seashore, seabed.
When can you have a report ready for us dealing with all three things? Okay. One is offshore, what is happening and what is our role and what are we going to say
sure.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's coastal, which is also our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And then I think we must keep sand mining as separate because that can happen
in
the coast, but also can happen off.
Yeah.
So I think we must keep offshore, coastal mining, and then other kind of sand mining as a third issue, which you know may or may not be important. As you're pointing out, some of that's used for building and so on. And but it seems to... Now, when can we get that work done and give us a first report on it? How long will it take?
The planning, the discussion we had, we were supposed to enter at noon then to your time. So maybe give us a month to...
So you guys will now go and talk to the DMR, find out what's going on there, so that we have a full report on this matter, and of course where you're still doing research to point out that we're still doing research in this area. I mean, you know, I think we must be careful. I don't also want to build up a scary kind of thing like people try to do with fracking, because I imagine there are huge parts of the ocean floor 20 kilometers out to sea where there's nothing. And that if there's something to be mined there and we can do it well, then let's mine it. Let's just not pollute and so on. But I imagine there are certain parts of the ocean floor, like Isis-Mangaliso's coast, where there are reefs. And those things where clearly you don't want anyone to go close to. And even to mine close to it so that sand can go onto it. So, you know, we don't want to create a scary tactic because there may be places, I imagine, I'm told around this coast here, when you go out to sea, say 20, 30 kilometers, I mean, if there's like some phosphate or titanium you want to do there, and as long as it's done according to whatever the rules we create, well, that's fine. So, you know, I don't also, the issue is really to properly understand the issue. Because even when we started here, the thing was sand mining, and it's actually what we're talking about is offshore, which could be sand mining, but it could be other mining. There's coastal, which could be sand mining, but it could also be other mining. And then there's sand mining, you know, other places. So, you know, we need to get clarity on all those things. So, in a month's time, let me know if we're ready. I'll probably provisionally create a date for the report, and let's then look at this thing further. Of course, I hope that biodiversity and at least Isis-Mangaliso will be part of this team. Okay? I want you to take them so we don't work in isolation from each other. Oceans, of course, ocean leads it, it's their job. But make sure that Nkitini and his band, merry band of women and men, are part of that. And then, of course, the very merry band and woman from merry band of men and women from Isis-Mangaliso also part of that. And if it's necessary, of course, Sandy can also be drawn into it. But let's do this as a team, being led by Oceans, and let's get a proper report on the kind of issues that we need to look at here, okay? And in that process, Oceans need to strongly engage Minerals to hear what it is they're actually doing and what they think they can do and can't do. Because having read some of the legislation recently, I asked Mrs. McCourt about it, and she indicated to me that a lot of that is actually the EIA should be done by us. My interpretation of it was correct. And it seems that we're not maybe part of it, or not as we should be. So that's what we're really trying to do without any kind of creating kind of any scary tactics around this, is to really get information around it and then see how we respond. Okay, that was a good question, Ms. Manganya, thank you. And then there was just a response to Mr. Dr. Huang.
Yes, thank you. Honourable Member, just to answer that question, 1,200 temporary jobs have been created year on year, or more or less, and each year the number of permanent jobs does vary. The ability to create more permanent jobs is always limited by the size of the funding, the size of the projects, and you certainly get to scales, and then the issue which the chair raised earlier on operational expenditure also becomes an issue with capacity because you need more staff, etc. Importantly, the way we're trying to grow permanent jobs directly in both in tourism is through the entrepreneurship program I mentioned. I think we're up to about 150 entrepreneurs now. We started with none 3 years ago. These are people running small businesses. They attract, you can visit them, you can see what they do. And that program can only grow.
In the park or around the park?
In and around the park. We were very naive in the beginning and thought we'd find all these tourism people, and there were actually very few. So what we've done is work with any entrepreneurs who are running businesses which are ecologically sound. It could even be buying a cattle and feeding them up for a wedding, taking photographs, running computer centers. And from there, you get an interest in tourism, and there's a natural growth into the existing tourism businesses. And as we tender it two different ways. Obviously, all our tenders have BEE and mandatory partners requirements. So we distinguish between a Johannesburg BEE person and a local BEE person. But some of the tenders are what we call reserved. So those have to go to locally majority-owned and managed BEE companies. This is an activity. In terms of our spend, we average about 70% of our spend annually, qualifying expenditure, goes to BEE, which is fairly high for rural areas.
So they deliver certain services,
yes,
you then
correct. But I think the underpinning thing is you can never create enough jobs. We have 620,000 people in the second poorest area in the country, and that was a comment I made earlier about parks becoming a lightning rod, because the more you deliver in the absence of delivery outside parks, the more there is contestation around that delivery.
The more successful you are, the more, it's like an ANC, when you raise something, they say, okay, you in charge. I know what you're saying. Ma will do it all the time with me. I raise something, she says, okay, you then sort it out. That's what happens with the parks. The more successful you come with this, the more expectations are created, because those things are not being done by other government agencies. That's your problem. DG, you wanted to raise something?
Chair, I thought I would add to the response. My understanding of Dr. Kwan's question was there seems to be a contradiction between the fact that in Isimangaliso we have an increase in BEE and SMME spend, whilst you have temporary jobs and very much limited permanent jobs. And I think he was asking the question on whether that is linked to the fact that we have EPWP requirements, and I think that is the correct, that's the fact, because part of what Isimangaliso is spending on job creation is funding that is determined in terms of the expanded public works requirements, and therefore they would take many people for a short period of time whilst exposing them to skills development. So in the long run, I guess there could be more permanent jobs elsewhere, but not directly with the Mangaliso in that case.
Mrs. Lewis, I want you to write me a one-pager on this entrepreneurship program and the successes we had and the numbers and so on, okay? And just do a one-pager. Okay, that was the, I hope in future now, Mr. Mkatini, that this is the way we're going to approach things. When you come and report, you try and report on all the conservation stuff and so on, and then of course the entities themselves will supplement what they think hasn't been dealt with. I want us to start working in that more integrated way. It may not work so easy in the beginning, but in the end of the day, when I read the strat plan, I should never have to read the strat plan of Sandparks and Isimangaliso. It should all be in your strat plan, because everything they achieve, you must achieve. So the only thing is you pull together, you must pull together those strat plans and whatever other things we do beyond those two agencies. And that will be your strat plan. That's really what I'm trying to look at, and that's how I want us to report. So, I mean, if we reach, I have to reach those targets of ours. Where do we give more money? Do we have to give more money to Isimangaliso? Do we have to give more to Sandparks to do certain things? someone else in the department, in Sandy, or where do we, you know, so that we can start looking at this thing more holistically. You see, the problem I have is, just when I see how you do the budgets, you see, all that must be looked at together. You must be able to motivate together why Sand Parks need certain money in certain areas, or Isis Mangalisa or yourself in the conservation. I mean, who's going to buy this land? Is it next to Isis Mangalisa? Well, then we must try and get the money for Isis Mangalisa. Is it next to a Sand Park place? Then we need to... Is it a separate one, and are we going to put it under Sand Parks, or are we going to create it somewhere else? Is it under provincial government? You mentioned municipalities. You see, there's a whole, you know, lot of things that we need to look at. I mean, when we say we want to increase, you're saying now to 12%. Where is that 5% going to be increased? I mean, have we looked at areas? Do we have those areas? Does it make up 5%? Does it fit in? Therefore, how do we motivate that, you know, Isis Mangalisa must get so much more so they can buy that extra piece of land? Sand Parks need this. You want to put it, the provinces need this. You know, those are the kind of things that I want you then to start being able to unpack. Because here now I just have facts and figures and numbers and targets, but I'm not sure how we're going to get there yet. For example, that target, I'm not sure. I mean, but you should be able to know. And you should be able to say to Isis Mangalisa, we want you to add 1%, Sand Parks must add 3%, and then provinces are going to add 1%. Now, okay, how are we going to do that? And how do we motivate the Treasury that can take place? That over this period of time we make up the 5% we're trying to do. You see, that we need those plans now so that we can start. I mean, if I had those plans, I could now put it in my report and say, this is the way we think it must go. We strongly recommend that this is budgeted like this. But I don't, maybe you have the information available, but I haven't got it. But that's why I'm trying to force you to work more. It's in no way to undermine those entities. I'm not wanting to get rid of Isis Mangalisa or Sand Parks or Sandy or something. I think we must be careful to expand their mandates. I mean, I really do. We must be careful. And if we do, there must be budgets for it. But if there is an area that's necessary that we have to fulfill, let's say under this sand mining thing, something arises which is not being dealt with now. And we have to put it somewhere. And it has to fall under Sand Parks because it's next to the Kruger Park or Isis Mangalisa or wherever. Well, then, you know, we do that and we expand that mandate. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to let us think after 3, 4, 5 years we've all been together now, we understand each other. Now we must, in this last, we've only got a year left to achieve certain things. I mean, I don't know if Nkatini is going to be the next DG, for example, about the rhinoceros. I don't know if Mr. Zuluma is going to be in his position. I don't know if the doctor is going to be. I definitely don't know if I'm going to be here next year, because there's an election that's going to take place, and, you know, I may become the mayor of Kukanap. I don't know if there's ANC one Kukanap, but let's assume it's one Kukanap. You know, I don't know. Ms. Bengu can become the mayor of Disneyland, and so on. And we don't know, and we may have different ministers. You know, so what I'm trying to say is, there's certain things we must tie down now in the next year. You've got one budget left to do this. And that's why I'm trying to let you think through these things, so that when we leave here, at least we have something that we've left behind and say, okay, whoever is here in this place, we know they're going to then drive this because the department is driving a program that we've all bought into. Okay, that's why I'm trying to do it like this, so that we can, in this last year, I want you guys to think strategically and tie things down. Where there's gaps in the policy, in regulations and stuff, let's sort it out. There are problems with legislation, let's sort it out. There's a problem with our strat plans and how we want to... Let's do it. And let's try and get motivations that doesn't let Treasury reject about 10 things outright. Outright. Not, I'll give you 5 rand and then I won't give you more. Completely outright, naught for those things. Now, there's something wrong somewhere. You can't tell me that if you have identified these things, that you, year after year, are unable to convince people that money needs to be given, then there's something wrong. Either then we mustn't have it in our program, because it's clear that some people don't think it's part of it, or we need to motivate differently. And I'm hoping by drawing you guys together that we will now start motivating, because I want Mr. Mkhatini to say to me, here is where the 5% is going to come. There's a farm I want to buy for you, Chair, right next to through the farm there. That will give us another 200 hectare. There's a park, a farm there for Miss Manganya next to Pilansburg there, and it's another 200 hectare that we can draw into it. You'll have it with conditions. You know, that's the kind of thing that we need to know, because that's the only way we're going to be able to tell Treasury. We can't just say to them, you know, we need money for conservation. We need to tie it down and show them a program and try and get them to buy in. Of course, I'm very sad that Treasury is not here. Yeah, man, just send a letter and call me. It's too late. They should have been listening here now. I don't know why these things are not giving us money or not. Maybe it's very valid why they're not giving us money, but I don't know it. Now, they may not have money, but the point is, you look at priorities, then if there's a priority, at least you say to the department, you know, we'll give you startup funding or whatever, whatever. But you can't just, if it's something that we need, just outright reject it. And as I say, if they say they're not going to give us any money to make up the 7% of our conservation, then we must be able to say so. And then we mustn't have a target of 70. You can't come and put a target of 17 and then say, but I'm not going to give you funding for it. I mean, we must make up our mind. You know, I've been told reliably that you, if you're pregnant, you can only be pregnant or you cannot be pregnant. You cannot be half pregnant. This is a known fact. Biologically, you're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. There's never been a person that's been half pregnant. They think they're pregnant, but they're not pregnant. It's not, doesn't exist. This is the same in this case. We can't have things that are half pregnant. Okay? You either got morning sickness or you don't. One of the two. You can't think you've got morning sickness. That's not morning sickness. Okay? Alright, that's given us some ideas. We'll take the rest of the input tomorrow on the rhinos. And then we'll go to biodiversity and Sandby, and if there's space, we'll do soils at the end, because I wanted to do them with climate change, but we're not doing climate change now, we're doing it later. So we'll try and fit soils in at the end if it's possible. Okay, let's quickly do Indaluyeta and Buyisa back. These are things that haven't been done, that should have been done, so they're just going to tell us what it is they've done, which we didn't know about. Okay, quickly. A big story. Just...
Chair, we've included the entire report on the review of Indaluyeta's in the pack, so I won't go into that in detail. I will just summarize what was the reason for the decision by the Board of Trustees of Indaluyeta's to wind down the trust. The progress with this dissolution process, development...
Number four.
Yes, Chair.
Or five.
The work that needs to be taken forward, specifically in terms of the eco-labeling scheme or the eco-endorsement scheme, and how we're going to deal with that going forward. And then in Buyisa Ebag, we've done the briefing on the reasons for the winding up and there was
that.
So we will just be talking about where we are in terms of that process. So I will skip the slides on the reasons on that one. If we then go into Indaluyeta, just a little bit of the background, I'm not going to say everything that is there, but basically Indaluyeta was established as a partnership between the department and WESA at the time, with the view of establishing the environmental awareness campaign for the country. The primary goal was to design and implement an environmental awareness campaign that was focusing on, firstly, this eco-endorsement matter, which was seen at the time as the avenue of creating the revenue that will then sustain the trust and the campaign going forward. Then there was supposed to be a whole lot of extensive communication, marketing, and outreach campaign. In reality, that was mainly restricted to youth and women. And then also the partnerships that was necessary with the entire environmental sector in order to further promote environmental awareness in that regard. I think importantly is that the intention was always there to generate the income required to enable the smooth running of the trust, and by getting buy-in from all departments in the sector that need to be doing the work that we foresee in the trust to work. In 2008, we've looked at the, in terms of our governance review of the entities, we've looked at the trust and established that the way in which it was established was ultra-virus, because it happened without the necessary treasury approval. We then engaged treasury on the matter, and we have revisited the MOU that we have with WESA on the matter in order to continue with the process while this review about the corporate form is happening. At the same time, we looked at in terms of the financial feasibility. In around 2008, it became very clear that some of the that the avenues for funding was all very short term, that the eco-labeling process wasn't in the short term, and nowhere internationally did it in a short term generate the amount of funding that was necessary, and they were therefore mostly dependent on, for example, the Lotto funding, and for acting as an implementing agent in various EPWP projects, for example, the Eco Town project, and that was the only way of being sustainable, which was in the long term. All those programs also were short term of nature. So in short, they were not sustainable as a financial means, and the intention was never for the department to fund them. Our 4 million contribution was at the end the only thing that they had that was constant in their funding process, while all of the work was done still in silos by most of the departments themselves. Everybody has grown their awareness campaign, and there was more assistance in terms of, for example, the Women and Environment program, for which there's a separate forum established, and they were just playing a facilitating role. So there were successes on individual cases where they've done excellent, marvelous work. The trust
they did
itself,
that train, didn't they?
They did train, the climate train was done by them, which was in the end also substantially funded by the department in the end. So the board functioned, there wasn't governance problems in terms of the board. The main issue was about the sustainability of the fund and the fact that the corporate form wasn't conducive for the purposes that we had envisaged. We then looked at various options, and I'm not going to go into this in detail in the report. We've looked at establishing a public entity, we've looked at a government component, and ultimately we tabled all of these in front of the Board of Trustees and said, from our side, we cannot increase our contribution beyond the 4 million that the department is giving into this, but it's also clear to us that that wouldn't sustain them and that they cannot fulfill the function, and therefore we would also be withdrawing that fund and rather channel it to an eco-endorsement process that will pick up faster. And based on that decision, the board then has passed the resolution from their side to dissolve the board. We have, from our side, been offered the assistance, and we actually, outside of that 4 million, have appointed service providers to assist and assist the board with this resolution, with this resolving process of Indaluyetu, in order to deal with all the assets and liabilities. It's going very smooth and very fast because we didn't have governance problems. And if I report back on the Buyisa matter, you'll see that has delayed us. So the process is currently being finalized. We didn't take over, it is not like Buyisa, where we took over the functions. The functions have not been taken over by the department. We have just expanded the work that we've already been doing in that regard. And the eco-labeling process itself, which is a substantial thing, is best placed by the next slide. Is best placed by the National Center in terms of Cleaner Production Center, which is the entity reporting to the Department of Trade and Industry, and they have already entered into a draft MOU with us. We're still busy with the final negotiation with CSIR and the Cleaner Production Center and the DTI to take over this function in full in future and take the ESO endorsement process like they do with all of the other labeling and endorsement is in the DTR. So it is the most appropriate home for that function. But yeah, this whole function will be totally finalised by the end of May. Will you say that can fit that? In terms of the progress of the winding up, the staff have all been included into the department in different areas. Mostly they are with environmental programs where the working for waste work is going forward, as well as the work that they were doing on some of these buyback centers are now with environmental programs, which is seeing that work through. What is delaying the final winding up of this matter relates mostly to liabilities, and as I said briefly, is very much linked to poor governance in terms of the process. One of the examples is that it's very difficult to set an opening balance for the financial year that we're trying to get the balance statement at the end, because there was qualifications in the audit in the three preceding years before we are now balancing the books there. We had contracts that were not implemented, not finalized, and we had to do quite a lot of work in terms of establishing what are the different status of the different contracts. And some of the contracts were drafted, were almost verbal agreements with a letter just confirming a verbal agreement, and it was very difficult for the department to seek those contracts without fully understanding what the liabilities are. So we have, as a department, honored all the liabilities that we could reasonably honor. We've cancelled some contracts, and there is still two matters that we are investigating closer and for which there are court procedures, that there is just not sufficient paper trail for us to see what were the actual commitments, what was delivered, were payments done, etc. So the final winding up we foresee will happen through a court decision at the end of May.
So both of them in May?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions, any comments, anyone? Seems quite straightforward. Those two entities, I mean, in any case, I've always been of the view that environmental awareness must be done by the people that are responsible for it. You can't get a separate entity. So it's probably just as well that that one didn't work out. Although they did do some good things as well. Okay. Now, let's, tomorrow morning, we start at 9 again. We'll do the rhinos first. They're just going to come and tell us what it is they've done as far as our workshop was concerned. Remember, what further they, because they did come and report back once. So what further they've done about that. Then they're just going to come and tell us what happened at the hunting in Gaba and what the recommendations were. I see there's a thick report here. We don't need to go through all that, of course. And then there's a what's called a Rhino Manager Report. There, I think they must come and pull out the most important things in there that are linked to the recommendations. So again, not the whole thing that's pulling it out. And then lastly, they'll tell us what happened at CITES now. This last week when I went to CITES with the department. What happened there, because it's important that the committee is aware of that as well. So that will start tomorrow now. Please, get in. I know you like Kuluma, Teta, Fran. Come and tell us just what you've done extra. Come and tell us what the Indaba agreed. Come and give us the main things of the manager and then what happened at CITES. Okay. And then what's our plans forward on CITES. Okay. And then after that, we'll do the biodiversity input plus Sandy. And then if there's time left at the end, we'll do something source and just point out one or two things in there and there. Okay, and then all the other things will stand over for further meeting. Alright? Deidre, can I quickly see you and Ms. McCourt? Meeting adjourned till tomorrow, where? Committee room 1 in 90 Plain Street. That ugly building there where the tech man was. Committee room 1 at the bottom. He's look. Thank you.